You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I am Steve Dotto. We are glad you are joining us this evening. Are we not, Art Factora?
Always. Every single Wednesday.
Every single Wednesday. It is party time, tech party time here on DottoTech. And today is the same. We have just a great show lined up. It's all meat, no filler today.
That's good, because filler just gets you tired
and
lethargic.
Bloated.
Yes.
Feeling bloated. There's no technology bloating. We are going to be taking a look at NetTalk, which is a voice over IP product. Save you a lot of money. Replace your landline if you want to use the internet for all of your normal phone, allowing people to make regular phone calls to you. It's a good idea, good product. I think you've tried it out a little bit.
I used the app on the way down to California. Went to every McDonald's and Starbucks, and I was able to call home.
Phone home. I'm lost.
Fantastic.
Send money. We're also going to be taking a look at the electronics Stewardship Recycling Association here in BC, with the people that are in charge of recycling all of our electronics. We're responsible for getting our electronics to them. Then they take care of it and make sure they're environmentally friendlily disposed of.
Do they have like an anagram for their name?
Yes, ESBC. Hmm. ESABC. Something like that.
Not as catchy as I thought it would
be. And we also got Mike Vardy is going to be joining us. He is an editor. He's the editor at Lifehacker, which is a wonderful website which teaches you basically how to use technology to be more productive in your life. But he just spent time down at Macworld, so it's going to be a Mac-alicious show today because we're going to be talking a lot of Mac stuff. And I know you're now a Mac kind of guy.
I'm getting there. A couple more months, and I'm looking at that MacBook Air and thinking, that'd be a good investment.
Now, I've got a proposal to make to you today, Mr. Factora.
I do.
I heard through the grapevine that you are now moving locations.
Yes.
You're moving into new digs.
I am. I found a great place on the west side. I'm a west side guy now.
Okay. Now, and you're moving in with nothing.
Well, pretty much.
You've got a TV.
I have a TV.
Is it a
I don't
plasma?
Even have a bed.
Do you
yes.
have a plasma
I have an
TV?
LCD, actually.
An LCD TV. Okay. What size?
Like 40.
Good. So it's a good sized TV.
Yes.
So you have to now technologically fit out your apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want you to start a blog on the DottoTech site, the decisions you make on your sound system, on what sort of interface with the TV, if you're going to get Netflix, what sort of a feed you're going to get, what you're going to do about your internet connection. I want you to put all that kind of stuff up and why you make the decisions, not just price.
Not just price.
Yeah.
My entire life is based on price.
But you have to make good decisions. You have to get bang for your buck.
All right.
You're going to do that?
I can do that for you.
You think you're going to do that?
If people will read it and comment, I'll do it.
I don't care if people read it. I just want some... You haven't written a thing for our blog,
I know,
for our
I'm
website.
Sorry.
You haven't done a single thing.
I should.
We're almost a year into the show.
I will. I guarantee you, I will.
Almost nothing on that front.
Sorry.
I'm just going to point out one story that I had in the newsletter last week, and I'm going to put it up again. Did you hear about this poor programmer who is in Iran? He went to visit his father, who was dying of cancer, I don't know, of cancer. In, I think, 2009, this programmer, he lives in Toronto, born in Iran, lived in Toronto, wrote some software, went back to visit his dying father, got arrested.
Oh.
Because then he was sentenced to death. And the death sentence was just upheld by the Iranian Islamic court. The reason is he wrote software which was used to upload porn to the internet. He wrote basically an FTP client, a piece of software which will take a file and then upload it to the internet. I don't think he knew what it was going to be used for. I mean, yes, it could be used to upload images. I don't think he specifically wrote it, this is for boobies. I don't think he did that.
Well,
at any rate, even if he did that, it's anti-Islamic, so they've sentenced this guy, like a 35-year-old Canadian citizen, to death for writing this piece of software.
Yikes.
I know.
I can't go to that country because I've done things that
are way worse. But you're not Islamic. You aren't Islamic heritage, I don't believe. Are you? No,
no,
you're not. But the bottom line is this is terrifying for the... And in Canada, we've got no leg to stand on because we have no diplomatic relationships with Iran because we're criticizing them over their nuclear program and their support of terrorism. So basically, our citizens, the Canadian government has zero clout. Terrifying story.
Wow. Well, be informed and do what you can to sign petitions and so forth.
There you go. We've got a great show lineup. Stick around. Joining me online right now is Craig Weishart. He is the program director for ESABC. ESABC stands for the Electronic Stewardship Association of British Columbia. Thanks for coming, Craig.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
The Electronic Stewardship Association of British Columbia are the people that are responsible for taking all of our electronic detritus and disposing of it efficiently, correct?
That would be it. Electronic Stewardship Association of BC is a mouthful, but that's exactly what we do. We're an industry-led group that not-for-profit, and our responsibility is to safely recycle the end-of-life electronics.
And that's an increasingly challenging proposition, I imagine, with the volume of electronics people are shifting out of their houses now as new stuff comes in. So you guys are not-for-profit, but you are pretty well supported by the fact that every time I buy a piece of electronics today, I get a line item for the most part that's for recycling. That money goes to you, right?
That's correct. If you buy an electronics item at your local retailer, you'll see that EHF environmental handling fee on there.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we make sure to say that that's not a tax. We're not a government agency. We're an industry-led group. But exactly right. That money is collected and comes to us, and we use that for the administration and program costs to safely dispose of those electronics once they reach end of life.
So, Craig, tell me that you're using my hard-earned money wisely.
We are indeed, and in fact, one of the reasons that that I'm at the program now is I've got a business background, and really the board of directors hired me to look at costs, and obviously this is a business of balance, and we obviously cannot compromise in areas like the environment or any of that kind of thing, but we're very conscious of costs and the fact that our funding comes from the consumer, and that it's our responsibility to spend that money wisely.
So many people still aren't aware of what the best method for disposing of any of the electronics are. So why don't you fill us in? It's not just putting it in out on the curb for curbside collection.
That's correct. I mean, we obviously do not want people to put electronics out on the curb or in the back alley that isn't where they belong. And realistically, the very first choice is to look at that piece of equipment and see if it has value in it. If
mm-hmm.
it's a good piece of electronics and it's got use in it, you know, the best thing you can do with that is put it on eBay or Craigslist and give it to somebody who can use it, or better still, a computer for an organization like Computer for Schools. So
mm-hmm.
reuse is a very good place for that computer to go. But if it's truly at its end of life, or a television, or an old monitor, then that's where we come in, and we run 120 plus depots around the province, most of them under the Return It brand.
Okay,
and that's where we would like to see those electronics go.
And so in every community, there's one of those Return It places where we can take our bottles and cans and some other recycling. I can take my electronics in there now.
That's correct. Again, there'll be potentially some smaller communities that can't support a depot, and we run collection events in those locations.
Mm-hmm.
But most major population centers, most even smaller cities and towns around the province will have some kind of a collection depot. Again, most of them run by the Return It folks, but we also work with the municipalities, the regional districts. Salvation Army does collection for us.
So, oh, okay.
A number of options around the province.
Now, once they go into the Return It, they're not looked at for repurposing. They're looked at that point for disposal, correct?
That's correct. So
yeah.
We want the consumer to look at that electronics before they bring it to us and say, hey, you know, can we give it to Computers for Schools? Or
mm-hmm.
I know you've done some work
Free Geek.
With Free Geek.
Yeah, Free Geek
like
in
that.
Vancouver, yeah, is a great alternative. They have minimum standards of computers that are going to be recycled, or if not, then they tear them down into the component parts. Televisions must be the bane of your existence right now, or you get excited because there's so many, but they just don't seem to have any value out there, the old CRT displays and TV sets.
And that's correct. I wouldn't. None of the end of life electronics is the bane of our existence because it is our existence. But we certainly are keen on making sure that stuff doesn't wind up in a landfill.
Because there's lots of bad stuff in that.
Bad stuff can happen to it. So that's really what we're looking to do. And but you're right. I like to tell the story of Grandma's old 1963 color TV that she watched Bonanza on. Right. I mean, we still see those.
Wow.
And that's what we really want to get out of the environment. There's lead in the glass of that picture tube, and we certainly don't want that in a landfill leaching out.
Now, you have money coming in from the sale of new electronics, which you then have to spend to dispose of the old electronics. That can't always be an easy balance because depending on the economy, sales are going to be different. So your cash flow is not necessarily dependent on the success of getting people out to recycle. What happens and how do you actually pay money for the disposal and how much control do you have to make sure that it's responsible? Because we do hear stories of, you know, we've heard stories in the press of, you know, cell phones coming from North America and going over to China and just being burned in huge piles and things like that.
And that's what we're here to prevent, and I think we do. In fact, I know we do a good job of that. But the funding side, you're right, it is challenging in that respect because effectively the EHF that you pay at the till today when you purchase electronics really is going to fund the electronics that are historic and that are coming into our depots and into our network now. So there is that kind of disassociation between the purchase because the life cycle is so long on electronics. So, you know, we do have to look at that balance, and we do have to adjust fees periodically, and that hasn't happened. I think the last fee adjustment was back in 2009, and it was actually a decrease of the fees at that point. And so, yeah, that's the balance that we need to work, and that's one of the reasons that we are looking to reduce costs in the program is so that we can continue to grow the amount of electronics we recycle, which is our goal, without going out and raising that fee on the electronics that are sold today.
So where do these end of life cycle electronics go? Is there one huge place that disposes of everything, or is there, you know, depending on what it is, does it go to different places?
There's actually several locations throughout Canada and a couple right here in the Lower Mainland that do this kind of thing. And it's actually we refer to it as kind of the upstream and the downstream. And there's some initial work that's done when these things are brought in, and just what you referred to earlier, the plastics are taken off. Like if it's a TV, you take the plastic cover off, and that goes into a stream for recycling plastics, right? And if it's a TV, one of the old CRTs, we take the picture tube out, and those things go. In fact, most of those wind up out at Tech Cominco and Trail BC.
Okay, for the smelter there.
They smelt the lead out of that out of the glass, and then the circuit boards have value. They've got gold in there and copper, and those are all sent to downstream smelters, and those metals recovered.
Now, so, do you recover some cost or some? Do you make some money off the sales of some of these items that are more valuable, or is that not in the cards?
The way it works is that the net, we do pay the recyclers to recycle the product, but we don't pay effectively the full cost of the recycling. That is subsidized, if you want to call it that, by by them selling the raw materials that they get from that. So basically, they bill us on the net cost of the goods after they've recycled the valuable materials out.
So they're incented to be efficient as well.
Correct.
Good.
They very much are.
And how are we doing in BC versus the rest of the country?
We're actually doing very well, and I would say, in fact, there are lots of numbers out there that say that BC is one of the most successful electronics programs in North America. We're doing, well, since program startup, we've recycled over 65,000 metric tons of electronics. And this year we'll probably do, one of the measures that's used worldwide is kilograms per capita. And we'll do over 4 kilos per capita of the electronics that are obligated in BC. And that number stacks up well, certainly anywhere in North America and pretty much anywhere in the world, even Europe, where they do this stuff all the time.
Why do we have such a head start here? Why are we doing such a good job? Is it you? Is it all you, Craig?
Oh, of course it is. I wish I could say that. Part of it is, I'd say there's a number of factors. One of them is that I just believe BC is a very green province. We have very conscientious citizens of the province, and I think very people who think green much more so than some other areas. We do a lot of advertising. A big part of our budget is awareness and making sure that people know where to go and what to do with their electronics, and I think that's a big part of it. A number of those things I think combine, but BC being a green place and a beautiful place that people want to stay beautiful, I think is a factor for sure.
Well, that's good, and I don't think we can get the word out enough. A lot of people do know about it, obviously by the success rate at 4 kilos per person, but I think that we can increase that a lot, and it's certainly a story that I'm going to want to continue to follow. ESABC.ca is the website for more information. Look for your return at locations in your community or check with your municipality for other options if you don't happen to have one. Craig Weishart is the program director for ESABC. I have to thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thank you, Steve. We appreciate you helping us get the message out.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
I think it's been about 6 years since I actually had a landline in my house. I don't mind having a phone, but I don't see the point in having a landline anymore. And there is a new service, fairly new service in Canada, called NetTalk. Joining me online now is Phil Lynn. He is the Director of Business Development here in Canada. How are you doing, Phil?
Hey, great, Steve.
Glad to have you on board here. Phil, talk to us about NetTalk. It's a fairly new entry into the voice over IP marketplace in Canada.
You're absolutely right. In Canada, we would appear to be fairly new. I mean, we've actually been on the retail shelves since last summer. But NetTalk's been around for over 4 years, and we've been doing a lot of things in the U.S. and a lot of business-to-business things. And the retail products that we've developed have been tested throughout that whole period. So we took our time to make sure that we did it right when we came out.
Well, you certainly have a very simple and elegant-looking product. Now, for listeners who aren't aware of VoIP or just have their eyes have glazed over whenever it's been presented to them in the past, essentially, it's using your internet, your high-speed internet connection in your home to supply you with all of your voice your voice telephone. What happens is there's a small device, and it's really small now, and it just plugs into your router, and then your phone plugs into it, and you can plug your cordless phone or your landline phone into it, and it basically acts as an interface between your phone and the internet and allows you to use the internet connection to make phone calls. So you can make phone calls to other people on other VoIP devices, like another NetTalk device, or more importantly, you can phone people on traditional POTS landline, plain old telephone service landline, and they can call you with your local area code and number all intact. Did I explain it right?
You did great. And the only thing I could probably just add is that, we've been hearing for years that everything's coming through the internet, and we're streaming videos and everything, so it only makes sense that something like voice should have always been available. But now we've got the right item that is really user-friendly for consumers.
And price and all those sorts of things are all a great factor, but there has been one challenge that the voice over IP people have had, and that's dealing with emergency services and 911, because that's tied to a physical location. How do you guys deal with that?
Well, basically what you have when you sign up with NetTalk, you put in the location that you are going to be at, that you want to have 911 services respond to. So if you're in Calgary and you have to go on holiday somewhere to Toronto, you would just make that change, and as soon as you would input it, we would have all the 911 services go to wherever you are.
So does that tie directly into the 911 system so that they know the address that phone is registered to right away?
That's a great question, and the answer is yes, because when you input your location on the for your 911 response, that will be exactly where they go.
Okay, that really overcomes one of the biggest hurdles that there was for voice over IP, because it wasn't, for the longest time they were struggling trying to figure out exactly how to tie it into the emergency service system.
we've been very, very successful with that. A lot of that was old technology and old concerns. And like I said, we've taken a long time to make sure we did it right.
Good. Now, you mentioned the fact that if you're going to be in Toronto and Calgary with the phone, that's one of the real beauties of voice over IP from my perspective. And for people like snowbirds, you have your landline number, which you can then access through your VoIP account. But if you're going down for 3 or 4 months to Phoenix or to Florida, you can just take that device with you, plug it into your internet connection when you're on the road, and it acts as though it's your local phone number at that point there. If your friends and family phone you, it's a local call in Calgary. It's still a local call for them when they call you, but you're in Phoenix and your phone rings through. I think that's sensational.
It's one of the greatest benefits of what the internet has given to us with the voice technology. We like to call it sort of like you're taking your telephone passport with you. Wherever you travel, you're taking your telephone with you, and you're able to make calls back to North America for free, and your family's able to call you wherever you are in the world for free on that local number.
Now, talk to me about how much it costs.
Well, you know, the cost is $59.95 for the device itself, which includes 1 year of service. So the great thing about this is, for $59.95, you get a new phone line, you get a Canadian phone number of your choice, you get a full-featured service package, which gives you voicemail, call display, call waiting, everything that you'd ever want, and then on top of that, you get a year of free calling to North America from anywhere in the world.
So that's Canada and U.S., all free calling. It's $60 for the first year. And then when you renew at the end of the year, how much is that?
It gets even better. It goes down to 40.
Okay, well, that's good. So basically $20 for the device at that point there. Now, is it primarily a personal phone offering, or are businesses getting on the bandwagon as well?
Well, we've had a great response from everybody who's looking to save some money. So initially it was primarily made for consumers, for snowbirds, for college students who are going away, for people who traveled for business. But we're getting requests from people who've got maybe customer service representatives,
yeah.
You know, a small business. He's got 10, he or she's got 10 people across the province, and they're calling in all the time. Give them this device, and it all of a sudden makes it much easier for them to service their customers and save money for the company.
Yeah, so you could. So if you did have a series of offices across the country, and you put one of these in each of your office, it's a free call to each other at any time over NetTalk. Plus, you get the benefit of having local numbers in each market. That's pretty cool.
That's right. So I mean, we're expanding our service as we grow. I mean, you know, offices may need more sophisticated services down the road, but for consumers and for maybe somebody a small business, it's a great item.
Now, you have a smartphone app. Tell me about that.
Actually, the smartphone app has been a huge hit for us because it basically allows anybody with a smartphone, Android, Apple, BlackBerry, to download this app, which is for free, and it allows that individual to make free outgoing calls to North America.
And is that if I already have a NetTalk account already set up, or is that outside of the, do I not need to get the device?
You don't need to have the device. It was something that we made available to consumers to get familiar with NetTalk. And I'll be honest with you, it has been the number one downloaded social networking app this year. Well, for the last year, for the second half, and already for this year, outpacing Twitter and Facebook, because it basically gave consumers a free outgoing North American phone line.
So it's not for incoming calls, but for outgoing calls. And I can call landlines with this.
You can call landlines and mobile. There's no limitations.
So that's where, we'll mention the Skype word now, which I'm sure you'd probably prefer we didn't. But you have to pay for that ability if you use Skype. Skype does computer to computer for free. But if I want to call a landline, then I have to get in and subscribe for a monthly fee to Skype to do that. So that's a super service.
We've done a lot of research, and we've really tried to look at, you know, what it is that consumers want and how do we make it easy? How do we give them the confidence to understand that this technology that's been talked about for a long, long time is really now really here to be used and is consumer friendly? That's why we made the retail pack the way it is. That's why we've got a 7-day-a-week call center for consumers if they have any sort of questions. That's why we've tried to make it a simple format that somebody can basically purchase, and within 5 minutes of getting it, they can have a new phone line ready to go.
Super. So the website is nettalk, nettalk.ca. It's available at all the major retailers in Canada. And good, I'm going to hit you up. Yeah. You're going to give me one to give away to one of our listeners?
Well, you know, Steve, I think one's not going to be good enough, because I know your listeners are very, very sophisticated, and I think we should be at least giving at least two, and
okay,
probably talk about more.
Well, we'll start with two. And Art's saying, why did I? Art uses it. Art, our erstwhile producer, does use it. You use it when you're traveling down to California, didn't you, Art?
Well, I use the app.
Okay, use the app, the smartphone app. Oh,
yeah,
okay,
absolutely.
Perfect. There we go. Thanks so much. It's Phil Lynn from NetTalk. NetTalk.ca is the website. Check it out. And we'll be back with more of Dottotech in just a few minutes.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me in studio, my old compatriot, Cedric Tetzel from London Drugs. How are you doing, Cedric?
Doing well, thank you.
Good. Actually, we had another one of your compatriots on, because I know you've been doing a lot of work with ESABC, with the recycling folks, haven't you?
Yes, I have, last few years.
You've been on the board here in BC.
Yeah, I was there right from the beginning. In fact, I named a board.
Did you? You could have come up with a shorter name, Cedric.
You should have seen the original one.
Back from CES, I want to talk to you about what's happened in the world of ultrabooks, because we haven't covered them, and certainly the world is turning to lighter, faster, better, and the notebook is still improving by leaps and bounds.
Yeah, and the last couple of years we've seen some interesting changes. You recall something called the netbook.
Yes.
Okay, so the industry decided that small and light was the way to go. But unfortunately, I had to compromise at the time because of the technology available to not that powerful a computer.
And the main reason was battery life for these sorts of things. So they had the Atom processor, which was kind of anemic processor, not all that
powerful.
It was
a wimpy processor.
By old standard, like for Apollo 13 standards, amazing.
Yep,
but by our standards today, not so fast.
No, but it was good because it's lightweight. It lasts, the battery lasts a long time. And for people taking notes in classrooms and so forth, worked fine.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came to people wanting to edit video, photographs, do some more serious work,
mm-hmm,
it was pretty low powered.
Well, it wasn't designed for that, and they just shouldn't have tried on that. But you're saying that the industry was saying that they want that functionality in that form factor.
So what Intel primarily came up with last year is a set of specifications, of course, based on their processors,
mm-hmm,
low power, high performance processors, then coupled with solid state hard drives, and came up with a new set of specs they call the Ultrabook.
Okay, so the key components are a solid state drive and much higher speed processor that allows you to do more multimedia type work.
Yes, so what you have is a fully functional notebook,
mm-hmm,
runs the full power of Windows with its zillions and zillions of applications, but it will boot up in 20 seconds or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm. Because of the solid-state drive?
Because of the solid-state drive, and it can last between 5 to 8 hours on a single charge.
And is that main? But that can't be just the drive saving you that amount of power. There has to be a lot going into the displays and stuff like that.
And it's their mobile processor,
mm-hmm,
and new displays and extremely thin chassis.
Okay.
The thin chassis, the specs show a maximum 21 millimeters thick,
mm-hmm,
which means that every one of them we've seen is under an inch thick.
Wow.
So it's nice and thin, very light, usually below 3 pounds, somewhere between 2.75 to 3 pounds. So it's about the weight class of a netbook, the power of almost a desktop,
mm-hmm,
and it can last on the plane from here to Toronto.
And back. So the Ultrabooks, now who are the leading vendors producing these?
The first one to hit the market have been Toshiba.
Toshiba, okay.
And with Asus. And with Samsung. Samsung Series 9 The Toshiba Z830 were the first ones to hit the market.
Mm-hmm.
ASUS, HP, Sony, and everybody else is lining up, and they show products in CES.
What's the screen size?
They typically are around the 11 to 13 inch.
So 11 to 13 inch. And so the one that you haven't mentioned is, of course, Apple has their own style, I guess, of Ultrabook, which is the MacBook Air, which really fits under this design criteria for the most part, does it not?
Yes, and Ultrabook, think of it as Windows and Intel's version of the MacBook Air.
Of the MacBook Air, which is doing increasingly well. Are the consumers getting on board the bandwagon for the Ultrabooks? Is it kind of hockey sticking, curving up?
Yes, well, it's just started shipping, right?
So, yeah, okay.
But looking at the interest at CES, it's going to be one of the hits for 2012.
Okay, and what's the price range of these notebooks?
Right now, most of them are around the $1,000 range.
Okay.
$1,000 to $1,100. The Toshiba right now, it's on sale for $999.
Okay.
And the Samsung Series 9 is on sale for $1,099.
So we've got an 11 to 13-inch notebook that's under an inch thick. Durability is my concern when I think about these. When I think about the screen, how well do they stand up? Is it something that you have to be very delicate with, or is it going to stand up to a rough and tumble mobile lifestyle?
No, it's very durable. At least as durable as most of the tablets,
mm-hmm.
because that's the other competitor to these Ultrabooks is the tablet.
Yeah,
and the glass is strong. In one particular instance, I've seen a glass actually used on what we would call it the A panel, which most users call it the back panel, and it withstands a lot of scratch and abuse.
Okay, so they will stand up. What's the size of the hard drive that we're seeing? Because with these solid-state drives, Apple releases a lot of them with 64-gig drives, which I'm just thinking is a little anemic these days.
It's a bit small. Right now, the Samsung, for instance, come with a 256.
Yeah.
And the Toshiba is 128.
And so looking for a larger hard drive, because if you are going to be using it for media stuff, photos, video, you're going to need a little bit more storage space, aren't you?
Yes, and current technologies tops out at 256 or thereabouts.
Yeah.
But we know it's going to grow.
It's going to improve. Solid-state drives are definitely the way of the future. Performance-wise, you say they boot up incredibly fast. They've got very fast processors. Do they need a lot of RAM to perform well, or does the fact that we have a solid-state drive mitigate the need for a lot of RAM?
The RAM requirements would be the same because that's dependent on the application.
Mm-hmm.
So what the SSD drive or solid-state drive gives you is speed,
mm-hmm.
but it's also because there's no moving parts. There is less chance of damage when you move it around. There's also no heat generated,
yeah.
or very little heat generated at that time when it's in use. So again, its projected lifespan is going to be longer.
Mm-hmm. So we're still seeing the $1,000 notebook. That seems to be the magic mark that the manufacturers look. I think they were starting to get really nervous when they saw their notebook prices dipping mostly below $1,000. So these Ultrabooks are ways for them to keep their margins at least a little bit in place.
Keep that in place and also keep the performance curve up.
There we go. For more information on any of these notebooks or if you want to play with them, they're on the shelves now?
They are on the shelf.
Drop by your local London Drugs. Thanks, Cedric.
Thank you.
There is darn good reason to visit the Dottotech site because we have giveaways galore on Dottotech. Last week we gave away a Motorola phone.
Yes.
A Motorola phone. And this week we're giving away a copy of TurboTax. And next week we're giving six consecutive weeks we're going to be giving away a copy of TurboTax.
Everyone loves
people to do their taxes. Everybody loves doing their taxes. And we also have now a NetTalk Duo to give away. So that's two, apparently. I'm going to give one away per week so that people can have free phone service for a full year, free long distance anywhere in North America for a full year. That's a pretty cool one.
Yeah.
And so where do you go for that, Art? Tell them the website, Mr. Art Factora.
DOTTOTECH.com.
Would you do it again with a radio voice?
Go to dottotech.com.
There we go.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
You know, it's interesting how I sometimes go about finding guests for the show. I was sitting there looking on my LinkedIn profiles, and it said, you should introduce yourself. LinkedIn offers you these suggestions of you might know this person.
Right.
And this name came up. I'm sorry. On the line right now, we have Mike Vardy. Mike is from Vardy.me. He is an editor at Lifehack, and he's just got back from Macworld. So he's my guest today. But why he's my guest is I find him on LinkedIn, and I'm a big fan of Lifehack, of the website, which we're going to talk about at probably not today, Mike, but at some future time.
Sure.
And it says, oh, I'll say hi to him. He's in Victoria. That's great. So he might know who I am. So I sent off a do you know who I am email from LinkedIn, and he knew who I was. And so we started talking, and he was just on his way to Macworld. So that's how we got our guest. Was that a long preamble? How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. I'm tired. It was a long few days down in San Francisco, but it was a lot of fun.
January's trade show season, we just got over CES for most of the world, but Macworld was also a big traditional January show, and it used to be huge when Apple was involved. It was where Apple would make all of their big announcements. About 5 years ago, Apple pulled out of the show, but it has continued on, and it's still in San Francisco, correct?
Yes, it's in San Francisco. They used to use a lot more of the convention center called Moscone, but now it's just in Moscone West the last couple of years, actually 3 years now. And it's now called Macworld/iWorld.
Macworld/iWorld.
Yes.
Okay.
And it definitely was a lot more I than Mac this year.
Okay, because, well, the hardware vendors aren't making the kind of money off the Apple world that they used to. Back in the day, it was the only place that you could go to see new hardware was coming out. And it was a big love affair for Mac fans, back when they were a persecuted group that the rest of the world made fun of. But thus is not the case anymore, because Apple's now the leading computer seller on the planet. So we're not that special, those of us who like to use a Mac.
No. But the interesting thing was is that the hardware that was there was a lot of accessories. There's a lot of interesting things. And this is my first trip down, so I never had the experience of actually going when Apple was fully involved. And since they pulled back, it has gotten a lot smaller. So this is my first year going down.
Okay, so it's your first time. Have you gone to other major trade shows?
I have gone to one other major trade show, and it was completely unrelated to technology.
Okay, so this is your first time seeing a whole bunch of geeks in Moscone Center at the same time. You've had the experience now. What was your perspective as a first-time visitor?
Well, it was interesting because I didn't know quite what to expect of the venue itself. It's a beautiful venue. I don't know if you've been there.
Many times, yes.
It's amazing. It's just bright, well lit, and there was definitely a vibe there, but it was more about what they were bringing, that how it could be used on the Mac or on the iOS devices, because that was the big thing. It's now all about iOS. It was very clear that there was a lot of not just the cases, which we've heard about the past few years, but a lot of, apps and a lot of, how to extend your range and a lot of, a lot of that stuff. But the people that were there, at least the people that I ran into, not just the first-timers, but even some of the people who have been there going there for, several years, there was still a buzz. There was still excitement about it. And I think a lot of that had to do with the people that were there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the big thing and that was a big thing for me too.
Okay. So was there a lot of displays where actual software vendors that develop apps for the iPad and the iOS devices, were they in evidence? Was it a show that actually attracted that kind of boutique clientele?
Absolutely. There were niche apps all over the place, apps that could show you how to control different contraptions throughout your house. I think there was apps to show you how to make apps. There were Omni had a presence there again this year. Omni Group, who do a suite of sort of productivity software, they showed off their new one, Omni Plan for iPad. So that was one that was there. And then Smile Software, they were there. They talked about their new PDF pen for iPad. So there were a lot of developers that were doing the transition of their Mac apps over to the iPad, as well as iOS apps that were strictly built with small little communities in mind.
Well, that had to be fun. That I can see the appeal of being there with the and talking to the actual app developers, because there's tremendous passion still in that community. They all are in love with their product. If you're talking to the guy that actually or the woman that actually wrote it, there's something special, and it makes it that much better. Although you probably learn fairly quickly that you don't ask about features that they obviously don't have, because they get very defensive very quickly.
It was interesting. There were panel talks on the floor as well, and one of the sessions that they talked about were John Gruber and a few other developers that honestly I can't remember off the top that were doing a session about building apps and building applications. And I think one of the quotes that came out of this was something along the lines of if a feature isn't in there and you build a design to avoid that feature, then you're really doing yourself a lot of harm when it comes to the apps. And I'm paraphrasing here, but there was actually a lot of talk around that about how to make these apps, the UI, far more user-friendly for people. Because when you look at the device itself, I mean, in a lot of cases, it's people who have never really used have not used a Mac or is not their primary computer, so they have to get around that first and then learn kind of how the ecosystem works, right?
I'm guessing you weren't walking around the floor show with a playbook in your hand.
No. Did he still exist? Unless it was jailbroken.
No, perhaps. Okay, so let's talk about some of the actual products that you saw. So you mentioned now, for those of you who haven't visited Stepcase Lifehack, the website that Mike is an editor for, it is all about making us more productive through the use of technology. Did I explain that properly?
Yeah, I mean, technology is a huge part of it. I mean, basically, life hacks are any little tip or trick that you can use to be more efficient and effective. And, of course, technology can be anything from, paper, which is a form of technology, all the way up to the iPad.
So you probably looked at the floor very much with your editor's eyes, looking for stories, looking for things that are productivity oriented, because that's the nature of your business. What were the stars of the show as far as that goes?
There were some really interesting apps that there's a lot of calendar and to-do apps out there, and there's a new one that is still in beta, but it will be released very soon. There's a company called RealMax Software, and they developed Rapid Weaver and other software elements, and they've got another sort of partnership they've created with an impending group. And that's the name of the group there. And they've created an app called Clear. And what it is it's a to-do list type of app, but there are no buttons or menu items on it. It's all gesture-based.
Oh.
It's really, really interesting. It's got you can move around your tasks, and as you move around your tasks, all of these tasks are generated by sort of a color spectrum. So if you've chosen red as your main color spectrum, the higher up on your list, the brighter the red, the lower the shades, the lower you move it down, the shades change. Swipe it left, you check mark it off, that means it's done. Swipe it right, it means you deleted it. Pull up, it clears all the ones you've done. It's very intuitive. It just goes to show how much the gesture-based technology can be used just on its own.
It's interesting that is coming to the forefront. I was just playing with the latest version of the Android operating system on the phones, and that's one of the things that they've incorporated now in the mail, is that you swipe it to the right and it opens, and you swipe it to the left and you trash it.
Yeah,
as you're looking at it in list form, and I loved that interface addition.
The only thing about this app that I will say, because I've had a chance to try it, is that because the form factor on the iPad, the iPhone, is so small, because it's only for the iPhone,
okay.
is that it's if you're only using it to manage like a list in general, that's fine. You can actually hold things down and create different types of lists, but you really need to know that they're there, and it's sort of that out of sight, out of mind thing. That's my only concern, is that, you won't know where your other lists are, so you'll forget to do things. And that could be the limiting factor about this. But it was really neat just to see the way that form factor works with this type of swiping and sort of touchscreen technology.
Let's talk a bit about calendars, because that's an area that I think that we've got. I don't think that the iPad has made the calendaring world better, or that any of the calendar advancements have really helped us a lot. And here's my problem with it. Maybe you can speak as an expert from Lifehack on this. My issue is I don't use an iPhone all the time. I use different phones. So consequently, I rely on Google, a Gmail calendar as my main calendar. And integrating that and not getting duplicate entries from iCal or from the Apple calendar becomes increasingly difficult. Because when you're on your computer, you want to enter all of your calendar items just in your calendar. But in iCal, you have multiple calendars because you can set them up. And then making sure that it goes into the correct calendar so that it's forwarded to your mobility devices at the right time. That is my challenge, is finding a good calendar integrator. Am I out to lunch here, or is this a problem that others are having?
No, you're not at all out to lunch. I don't use the calendar app on my iPhone or iPad at all. I've got some apps that I have used. I actually wrote a piece on my web blog about decluttering my different calendars I had on my iOS devices.
Send me the link. I need it.
I will, absolutely. The one I'm using right now is called Agenda App, and it's made by a group called App Savvy. And it to me is the most formidable of all of them out there in terms of you can sync it to your Google Calendar, and you can also have multiple other calendars on there as well. So I've got my life hack posting article, and they're all represented by different colored dots. So it's much like that interface, but it's smoother to use. And as a guy who does productivity, I can tell you one of the things I don't use the calendar for is to-dos at all. I use it for appointments and things that have to be done at a certain time, such as, you know, like I've got a doctor's appointment or I need to pick somebody up at the airport at this time. I don't use a calendar for any kind of task management whatsoever, because that's not what it's meant for.
Does Agenda app work properly with invitations coming from Windows machines or other machines?
It is all related to either Google Calendar. So
okay.
A lot of this stuff goes through it. I know that they've, and I'm paraphrasing here, but I know that Exchange has worked in, like, the iPhone calendar at some point in time or another. I've never used it because I've never seen a need. But BusyCal was another application that was on display at Macworld iWorld, and it's a pretty popular one. It allows you to kind of integrate all of your calendars together. It's one that I haven't really used yet, but it's pretty popular. And there's a lot of sort of higher-end web writers out there that are on the Mac that use BusyCal as well. But I can't speak to the Windows stuff because, I left that ship quite a few years ago.
Okay. Well, I will certainly look up these two calendar apps because, as I say, it's to me that's the least organized area of my life, and it's the area that you should be most organized. But I'm finding, and I'm actually at the point where I'm worried that I'm missing appointments because as I put in an appointment in my phone, I'm not always confident that it's going to get translated back into my system at this point. And I think that I should be able to do better with all of this technology at my fingertips.
Well, the nice thing about Agenda app is that if I enter something into it from the phone or the iPad, it does sync across through all the platforms. And I mean, who knows, maybe the iCloud at some point will be able to handle all of those things. I'm not totally trusting iCloud yet because it's so new. But it could be the one that maybe is the magic bullet for that.
Before we break, I want you to fill me in on what were you saying about a PDF pen?
There's an app. Have you ever used Text Expander, the application for the Mac?
It's made
by, yeah, it's made by Smile Software. Oh, that's a productivity time saver. We could talk about that. That'll have to be that's a whole segment there. But basically, PDF Pen is an app that has been on the Mac for several years that allows you to make wholesale changes to PDFs, move images. You can do a whole bunch of PDF manipulation. They brought it to the iPad.
Okay.
So you can do it all on the iPad, sync it back to your Mac, sync it to Google Docs, sync it over to iCloud. It's really robust. It's very intuitive. It works a lot like Pages does in terms of how you can see things on the iPad itself. But it is very powerful. So if you've got to fill out forms, like, say, tax forms, or you have to fill out mortgage papers and you need to sign, because you can sign right on the iPad using your finger, right?
Okay.
It's so handy for that.
Okay, because I make sure all those documents end up on my computer, and then I use Adobe Acrobat for all those sorts of things. But it's basically as a shortcut, because Acrobat's very expensive as well.
Absolutely. This is not nearly as expensive. Plus, and I don't have a list price for it right now, but it is... They make really good stuff, and it's constantly in development. Plus, unlike Adobe, they're a smaller outfit, so it's much easier to get in touch with them and say, hey, I'm having an issue with this or I'm having an issue with that. You're going to get in touch with a smaller team. And they're based out of Portland, these guys, so they're right close, and I love Portland.
There we go. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll return with more talk about what's happening as a result of the Macworld show with Mike Vardy.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Mike Vardy is online with us from Victoria, BC. He was just down at Macworld, and this is a perfect opportunity for me to mention the Mac sponsor of Dottotech is, of course, Mac Station. Down in, there's three locations in the lower mainland of Vancouver. And the thing that you should know about Mac Station is they've got these great courses that you can sign up for that teach you all about iOS, the Apple operating system, and the mobility operating system. They're free courses that you can take. Even if you haven't bought anything from them, you can sign up for these courses. It's a great way for you to learn about the Mac if it's something that you decide you want to get into. And after listening to Mike and I talk about all things Mac, you're probably going to want to get a Mac or learn more about it. Mike, the... We were talking on the break, and one of the things that I wanted to get into was you talked about a product called the Neat Desk, and I like this idea. How does that work?
Well, the Neat Desk is made by the Neat Company, and they've got that Neat Receipts, little portable scanner printer that you probably see. I know they sell them at Costco and stuff like that. This thing is a small scanner, and you can put your large documents, your receipts, business cards all into it, and what it does is it scans them. And it's got technology built in that actually, along with the software, separates it into the proper areas so that you've got all your receipts organized. You can start totaling up stuff.
But now, I use Evernote for all that kind of organizational stuff. Does this do a better job than Evernote's going to do for me?
Well, it's that whole notion of do one thing really well. And all this thing is meant to do is to put things, either scan business cards and make it a contact list, scan receipts and put together some kind of spreadsheet for you so you can have your books ready for the end of the year, or just scan documents to have them on file. I love Evernote. I use it a lot. I'm a premium member. I even started using Evernote Hello and Evernote Food.
Okay, I hate to be contrary, but why do I need a scanner when I have a smartphone with an 8-megapixel camera?
Because the Neat Company is basically going to be releasing the Neat Cloud and Neat Mobile. So what they're going to do is they're going to take the paper stuff that they've already they've done a really good job on the market with that, and now they're going to the cloud. So there's going to be Neat Mobile where you can take a picture with your phone, and you'll get the OCR technology built in. Will organize all of the information just as it does with the scanner, and the cloud organizes it all. So that way, all of your stuff, no matter where it's coming from, whether it's coming from the Neat Desk, the Neat Receipts scanner, or whether it's coming from your phone, will all go into one area, and it's backed up as a result.
Now, I like this idea, but I'm not sure I like this idea, because I've got my system in Evernote, and now they're saying that there's a better way to do it, and I'm not sure I'm ready to change.
Well, the beauty part about having a system in place already is that you don't have to change. But
I know, but now I do because I know about it.
Let's put it this way: after I went to a big, after all the receipts I've got at the end of this trip, I was so happy that I didn't actually take pictures of them every single time out, because now I'm going to have a Neat Desk to test out and
this
I'll be
anyone.
Able to see how well it handles. Because I got a ton of business cards and a ton of receipts, so I will probably test all of this Macworldness on the Neat Desk and see how it plays out. The nice thing about it too is that it actually has, and this is more beneficial to American. Americans at this point, but they say they are working on it for other countries, is that they can start to automatically fill in schedules for you for your taxes, so you can send them right off to your accountant and say, oh, yeah, this stuff is supposed to be going into Schedule B. So they're making it a real comprehensive
suite.
Wow. Yeah.
How much is the Neat Desk product? How much does it cost?
The Neat Desk, I don't have any...
I'll put it on the website.
Yeah,
that's,
I don't have
that's
a price. I'm getting it to check out, so it'll be... And the funny thing is, I've been using paperless a long time for my receipts because it organized them as well, and this could really give it a run for its money.
For links to all of these products, we'll have them up on the website. Mike Vardy is, you can find his stuff at Mike Vardy, MikeVardy.com. You also find his work all over the Lifehacker site. Mike, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. I'm Steve Dotto. You're tuned in to Dottotech. Just like that, we've run out of time, Art. The show has flown by. Now, off the top of the show, I made a claim. I said this show is going to be all meat, no filler. What do you think?
I think of shows that we've done, this is definitely the most Atkins-friendly show we've ever done. All protein.
It was
we're going to be slim by the time. After a couple weeks of doing shows like this, We're going to be looking good.
Now, listen, all of the websites that we talked about today are going to be listed on the show. If you want information about the recycling folks, that's going to be there. If you want information about the voiceover IP, that's going to be at the website. But most importantly, at the website, you can enter to win either your copy of TurboTax or your NetTalk Duo, so you have free phone for a year. That's the two separate entries you have to make at the DottoTech site. But
either way, you're saving money.
Either way, you're saving money. Well, I do love the online tax preparation stuff. I think that that is just the way to go because it's such a responsible thing for us to do as citizens because it costs the government literally a tiny fraction of the money to process our return if we e-file, if we put it in online, as opposed to having it re-entered and re-keyed in. The cost savings are spectacular to the government. And those are the dollars you're giving the government hard at work. That's it. We don't really have anything else that we have to cover today, do we?
I don't think so.
I think you're going to want to join us next week when it will be another all-content, no-filler show.
Let's do it.
I'm Steve Dotto. On behalf of Art Factora, thanks for listening to DottoTech. See you next week.
DottoTech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.